Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming by. This is Rini at Rini's Heart to Heart. This morning, we're going to finish the conversation that we were pretty deep in the middle of yesterday when I had to have a short show, and we discussed AIDS and HIV and a lot of the true facts about what's going on with AIDS. I also, during my research, realized about all the, even though I had known it, I realized about all the different manifestations, of course, of AIDS. And they are very plentiful. Once your immune system is impaired to the degree that HIV does for you, things like pneumonia and chronic pneumonia, which result in lung problems and often heart problems. Then there's also cancers. And your immune system is like the most important thing that you can take care of. And immunity means that you're safe from something. To be immune to something means that it's not going to hurt you. So building your immune system with nourishment and lifestyle is imperative to your, to the rest of your life, if you want to have any quality of life. So there are many ways that you can have a problem with your immune system and not have HIV and not have anything having to do with HIV or AIDS. So if you're sitting there listening to what I'm saying and somebody has said to you recently, gee, something must be wrong with your immune system, it just means that you can't fight off certain things. And of course, in order to have a good immune system, you have to take care of yourself. You know, one of my favorite sayings, I never knew who said it, but it was said a lot at the Institute, is if you don't take care of your body, where are you going to live? Don't you love that? It is so, so true. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, as well as one other little thing. In the past few months, we've talked at length about different things that have been going on, a lot of them right here in Florida. One of them was Caitlin Hunt. Caitlin was the young woman who was having a relationship with a girl younger than herself. Now, when I first came upon the story, it was... there was like 3 years difference between them. Now, of course, we've got Caitlin at 19 and the girl she's having a relationship with at 14. And in the very beginning, there wasn't that difference in age. So apparently Caitlin is growing without the other girl. I don't know for sure how that's happening. But the new news on that is Caitlin Hunt, the 19-year-old who faces charges of lewd and lascivious battery in Florida after police learned of an alleged sexual relationship she had with a 14-year-old girl, has accepted a plea deal. The case garnered attention as Hunt's lawyers claimed that authorities wouldn't have gone after her if the situation had involved a male and female instead of two teenage girls, which I believe is true. Under the new plea deal, Hunt will plead no contest to 5 charges, including 2 counts of misdemeanor battery, misdemeanor contributing to the dependency of a child, and 2 counts of felony interference with child custody, according to a copy of the plea deal provided by CNN, who is an assistant state attorney. The felony charges originate from the time she picked up the 14-year-old against the parents' wishes. My goodness. Hunt has been in jail since August 20th for violating a court order and has on not being able to have contact with the younger girl. So they put her in jail for that. Under the terms of the agreement, Hunt would be sentenced to 4 months in jail to be followed by 2 years of house arrest with an electronic monitoring and 9 months of monitored probation after that. My goodness. If she has no violations, she will not be convicted felon under the Florida law. She will have the possibility of sealing her file and having the case expunged after 10 years. Hunt's attorneys were involved in crafting the deal. Hunt's attorney said Wednesday night they could not comment on the case. She's refused at least two other deals. I believe this is a fair and balanced offer that protects the victim while giving Ms. Hunt the ability to avoid the most severe consequences of her crimes by demonstrating that no further punishment is necessary. Hunt was 18 when she was charged with two felony counts of lewd and lascivious battery after allegedly having sexual relationships with the girl who was 14. In Florida, a person under the age of 16 is not legally able to consent to sex. So, I'm sorry for this young woman. I think that this is major overkill. I think that the fact that it was two girls instead of a boy and a girl, there was a lot more bureaucracy involved. I think that part of it is a shame. I think that I understand the points of view from the other parents. I get it. I'm a parent, a grandparent, a great-grandparent. I get it. However, to ostracize this girl, I think, is overkill. I think that it wasn't necessary. I'm sorry that Caitlin didn't get better, counseling from parents and powers that be in regard to not seeing this young woman when she first got in trouble so that they could get a handle on it. Had she not done that, I think maybe the powers that be wouldn't have found it necessary to, put her in the town square and stone her. So I hope she's okay. I send lots of good wishes out to her. I hope her choices are better ones in the future. And I'm not talking about her being gay. I'm talking about her paying attention to the ground rules that are already established, so that she doesn't put herself in that kind of a position again. And I wish lots of good luck to her in her future. I'm going to bring Shelley in so we can talk some more about the AIDS story and the HIV. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. I couldn't get into the show at first. I kept getting a busy signal, so sorry I was a minute late or so.
That's all right. I didn't know it because I was on the other site, so I didn't have the dashboard up in front of me. So when I clicked over, you were on, so I figured you were here.
The one thing I did hear you say is that you were repeating that quote about if you don't take care of your body, where will you live? That was Joni Albert, who was one of the program counselors and obviously a good friend of ours. That was a phrase she had coined, which I thought was brilliant, actually.
She thought of that on her own. I know Jody always said it, but I didn't realize she was the author. That's an awesome. I use it all the time.
I'll have to ask her because I thought she was, but because she used it, she had it on all of her paperwork, but it is possible that she wasn't. I'll ask her if she got that from somewhere. Either way, she was the person that I knew that introduced it to me, and
I just thought it was
brilliant. I mean, it was brilliant in its simplicity.
I agree. So, were you able to get any more research done, or should we just take off left off?
I actually have one thing here. I went through a bunch of my books, and some of them get into controversial theories about how AIDS actually got started and stuff. I'm not going to get into all that in a show like what we're doing. But one of the books, now this book was written by John Robbins, who was the author of Diet for a New America, which was the first book that ever really compelled me to become vegetarian. And then he has written a bunch of sequels. He's got a about 6 or 7 other books in the health and healing realm. He's the heir to the Baskin Robbins ice cream food chain, in case anybody doesn't know who John Robbins is. And he turned his back on this probably a billion-dollar industry. Baskin Robbins are everywhere. In order to clean up his own diet to save his life, because he had had polio as a kid and he was terribly crippled. He was told he would never walk as an adult. And he gets up on stage and strolls back and forth and looks at the audience and says, I was told by doctors I could never do this. And he, like what I did, by changing his diet and going more to a plant-based diet, he actually reversed some of the damage the polio had done that had crippled him. So he ended up doing research, and in his first book, Diet for a New America, he talks about a lot of different diseases, including Alzheimer's, by the way. He goes in disease by disease in one section of the book, and he talks about how studies were done at hospitals and like old age homes and things, where when people's diets were changed, there was this massive difference in their ability, in their cognitive abilities, and reversal of illnesses and things like that. So it's a phenomenal book, and he writes it in a very sensitive, caring way. So it's also an enjoyable read. So one of the sequel books is called Reclaiming Our Health. Now, this book is over a decade old, and I was very pleased with one of the sections he wrote in here, because just knowing that this is over a decade ago, I'm sure there's been more improvements. So now I'm going to kind of research that for what I'm putting in my book. But would it be all right if I read these 2 pages?
Sure.
Okay. And this one section of the book, he's talking about AIDS and HIV. He talks about a lot of different illnesses in this book, and these particular pages are specifically on AIDS and HIV. And he says, and once again, there are alternatives. What he does throughout this book is he constantly flips back and forth between medical approaches, diet, and holistic approaches. And so now he's going to the section about alternatives for HIV. We have today the knowledge of how HIV is transmitted, and how to effectively prevent it. And then he goes into some stuff that I don't need to get into. In the United States, AIDS is now, you've got to remember, this was about 15 years ago. In the United States, is now the leading killer of people between the ages 24 and 44. 2/3 of those have been diagnosed with AIDS, have died, and conventional medicine fully expects the remaining 1/3 to follow them shortly. So the field is changing rapidly. The exclusive reliance on drugs like AZT and even newer drugs like ritonavir and saquinavir, has so far been of only limited usefulness. As with cancer, though, there are numerous practitioners of alternative approaches who are claiming success in the treatment of HIV/AIDS. Though many of these claims may be exaggerated, it remains the fact that there are thousands of people who have been HIV positive for 10 to 15 years and who are not only still alive but showing no signs of the AIDS virus. Many have used alternative therapies that represent the hygiene lineage. Now, what he means by that is it's H-Y-G-E-I-A-N, hygiene lineage. There's 2 different medical practices, hygiene and I can't even pronounce it, they're Greek words. One means hygiene lineage has to do with lifestyle and natural approaches, and the other one has to do with medical intervention. Okay, so he's talking about doctors that are now looking at natural approaches and holistic approaches. John Kaiser, M.D., is a primary care physician in San Francisco, who has been working with AIDS patients for more than 10 years. 70% of his patients are HIV positive. When I think back to medical school, I was taught 2 things, he said. First, look for the infection or tumor and try to kill it. Second, if the patient's body has symptoms, find a drug that suppresses the symptom. Kaiser now takes a different approach, though, one that is truly holistic and inclusive. He is not opposed to the use of conventional medicine when it is helpful. And remember, this is a medical doctor. In fact, he says that the intelligent and effective use of standard medical therapies will always play an essential role in the treatment of HIV. but he bases his treatment of HIV/AIDS on a comprehensive system of natural therapies. The result? With his natural therapies program, when drugs are needed, far lower doses accomplish the desired result. The corresponding decrease in side effects is a tremendous gain because the side effects themselves can not only be brutal, but are sometimes fatal. If you remember in the beginning, a lot of people were dying from the from the pharmaceutical cocktails they were being given to battle the AIDS. People were succumbing to the side effects of the drugs because they were so strong. So in that So what he's saying here is that even when they did use some of the medical approaches, because they were marrying it up with these natural therapies, they were able to reduce the dose and thereby substantially decrease the side effects. Okay. I consider Kaiser's work with HIV/AIDS to be an exquisite example of the partnership medicine at its best, and in his results are vastly superior to any achieved by conventional medicine alone. During a recent surveillance period of 4 years, Kaiser's statistics were nothing short of magnificent. His treatment program, based on natural food diet, extensive use of vitamins and other supplements, Chinese herbs, exercise, stress reduction, and the cultivation of a positive attitude, produced a stability rate of 90%. Meaning that these patients either improved or did not further decline in their diagnosis. The survival rate during the same period was 98%. There were only 3 deaths out of 135 HIV-positive patients, including 30 who had full-blown AIDS symptoms. These numbers are staggering in a medical system that considers HIV to be a death sentence. Their significance can hardly be exaggerated. But Kaiser is not alone. There's only 3 more paragraphs, by the way. But Kaiser is not alone in making remarkable progress by using methods of Hygieia, which is natural, alongside those of Asclepios, which is medical intervention. John Priestley, MD, another medical doctor, of the Omni Medical Center in Anchorage, Alaska, is another internationally recognized expert in AIDS management who is willing to employ drugs and make use of other tools of conventional medicine when she feels they will truly help, but bases her approach on natural treatments. In 1994, she gave sworn testimony to the U.S. Senate subcommittee. Since 1986, she said, I have used an array of natural products to treat over 700 AIDS patients. The vast majority of my clients maintain excellent health and lead productive lives. One of Dr. Priestley's patients, Sharon Lunds, is well known throughout the United States, and I've actually heard that name before, and internationally as an AIDS educator, and has appeared on many television programs. When she testified before congressional hearings on dietary supplements as both an expert on AIDS and a person afflicted with the disease, she received a standing ovation from the congressional delegation. More than a decade previously, Sharon almost died from AIDS. With death looming on the horizon, Sharon prepared her will and made the difficult decision as to who would assume custody of her 12-year-old daughter when she died. Then she became one of Dr. Priestley's AIDS patients. Rather than take AZT, she chose to take various herbs and dietary supplements and receive acupuncture treatment to support and bolster her immune system. Within only a few months, virtually all of Sharon Lund's symptoms disappeared. Her diarrhea ended, her memory improved, she no longer had to have her daughter change her sheet 3 times a night due to night sweats, and she could function on 8 hours of sleep, not 18 to 20, as had been the case before. 5 years later, this is significant, by the way, 5 years later, her insurance company stopped paying for the cost of her supplements and acupuncture treatments. Unable to afford them, her health immediately declined. In a matter of weeks, she lost substantial weight, and again, her progress was poor. Her prognosis was poor. Fortunately, she was able to raise enough funds to get back on the supplements and resume the acupuncture treatment, and in months, her health returned. So I think that's all very significant.
Can you, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know a little bit about acupuncture. The fact that it opens up our meridians and gets a flow going in our bodies. Can you talk any more about acupuncture? I'm just wondering how many people out there, people in my own family aren't clear on what acupuncture is.
Right. Well, in Chinese medicine, they use something called energy meridians, and for decades, well, for hundreds of years, regular medical science said that it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as an energy meridian. That this is like hocus pocus, and so the Western medicine kind of poo-pooed it, like this doesn't exist. Now we have the ways of putting in trace elements into a human's body that can be monitored by equipment, and they still don't understand it. And I forgot which laboratory did it. It's in one of my other books, but there have been recent studies, at prestigious universities and laboratories now, where they have actually injected a person with this kind of a dye that can be picked up by machinery, but that has a magnetic resonance to it, and they actually see that this chemical tracks along the meridians that are shown in these Chinese maps. So they don't understand what this is traveling on. It doesn't make any sense to the laboratories, but they would see that this magnetic substance that they put in a human was actually tracking along what are called these meridians. They're energy channels in the human body, and you have hundreds of them. There's two main ones, one that goes down the front of the body and one that comes up the back. But you have energy meridians that go down your arms, that go into all your limbs, go into your organs. Now, when you suffer either an emotional trauma or you suffer a physical trauma, you can cause blockages to these energy meridians. When you have blockages in them, it causes symptoms. It can cause emotional symptoms. It can cause physical symptoms. It can cause pain. It can cause organs to stop functioning. So what acupuncture does is it finds these blockages and through a diagnostic process, and then the acupuncture, and there's other forms of acupuncture that don't necessarily use those little teeny tiny needles. They're like hair fine though, and if you put them in, they will open up the blockages in that particular meridian. Now, once the energy starts flowing properly, then the body starts healing itself naturally, because now you're getting the proper signals to the organs, you're starting to get energy transfer again. You know, one of the things you need to understand is that we're all made of energy. I mean, everybody knows that. This isn't, this isn't like new age nonsense. This is a scientific fact. Everything is made of atoms. Atoms are constantly in motion. There's really no such thing as solid matter. Okay, everything in the world is made up of atoms that are constantly in motion. And the difference between a human being and a table and a glass bottle is the vibration that those, or the frequency that those particular atoms are moving at, okay, and the different combinations of what makes up those atoms, like how many neurons and electrons of each atom. But it's all the same basic material, but they operate at different frequencies. So when you're talking about acupuncture, you're going in and you're allowing these energy channels, which carry different frequencies, to now get to the organ to make the organ resonate at the proper frequency. And when you look at a diseased organ, it is not operating at the correct frequency anymore. This is where vibrational medicine comes into play, and they kind of link together. It's all Eastern philosophy, so it kind of goes with Chinese medicine. But they found that every healthy organ, every healthy stomach, every healthy pancreas vibrates at a particular frequency. When you look at somebody who has disorder of those organs, they're no longer vibrating at that particular frequency anymore. But if you can bring it up to that frequency through vibrational medicine, through acupuncture, through all these different modalities that have to do with energy work, once you've brought that organ back up to the proper frequency, it will heal rapidly, very rapidly. And that's kind of the basis, is to bring the proper energy and frequency into areas of the body where it's been blocked. And that's what causes diseases. It's almost like not having blood flow, but this is instead of not having blood flow to an area, you're restricting energy to a particular area, or you're restricting vibration going into a particular area of the body. And when you don't have that vibration and frequency, you start having an illness or a sickness show up in that area or in that organ. So kind of an overview. It's a very, 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 very large subject, but that's kind of an overview of what it's all about.
Well, I think that we have learned at the Institute through various professionals about acupuncture, and we know that in some cases acupuncture helped people who were struggling with pain, number one, and like you say, and a real connectivity in their body with everything that's supposed to be serving each other. You know, we're like this constantly moving energy inside of us, and everything has to be connected. There can't be any blockages anywhere.
Right.
And I think what I was given to understand, we had two really wonderful acupuncturists at the Institute. Now we have another one that's there that I hear rave reviews about all the time. And they're able to help a lot of people with a lot of things. So if you're unfamiliar with acupuncture and you're struggling with issues that have to do with your immune system, that have to do with too much pain. I know people that get if you ever heard the terminology, like a frozen shoulder or something like that, often you get some relief with acupuncture.
There's other forms of acupuncture today, such as acupressure, and which they don't use the needles. It's based on the same philosophy where they're opening up the meridians. But for people who have an aversion to the needles, although they're very, very tiny, okay, but some people just can't go there. They don't want them. There is something called acupressure, which is also very, very beneficial, and it's based on the same philosophy of opening up the energy meridians and getting proper flow.
Okay, so on that note, I think that it's interesting to know that there are many options out there for people to take to be able to bring themselves to a much healthier place. If they are struggling with HIV, or even if you've never been diagnosed with anything like this, if you are in your 20s and you already are struggling with lethargy without any kind of real energy, every day is like, I got to make myself go do this, I got to make myself do that. That's not normal, folks. That's not normal. In your 20s, you should have great energy. You should be able to function at a very high level. If you're not, you need to examine what's going on. And the first things to look at are probably going to be your lifestyle. And lifestyle, of course, covers a very, very large realm. It's not just about what you eat or what you drink. It's about how you behave, if you have any kind of a regimentation in your life. You know, like some people get up every morning and stretch. They don't exercise. They don't do a whole bunch of jumping jacks in the bedroom, but they do get up and stretch. Takes you little or no time, and it's amazing for your body if you just get up every morning and stretch. I had back surgery probably, gosh, it's been a long time now, 20-some years ago. And every morning before I put my all the weight in my fat butt on my feet, I stretch. And if I, for some reason, don't do that, it doesn't start my day as well. And it's not a big deal. I just lay in bed and lay on my back and stretch my heels as far down as they can go and stretch my arms up over my head, turn from side to side and stretch my legs. And then I, before I get up, I pull my knees up and I push the small of my back against the bed like about 10 times. It's not a big deal. It doesn't take a whole lot of effort. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be doing it, but I do it every morning because I know I feel good when I do it. So it's a good idea to find out the little things that keep you in a better place. I talked the other day with a lady who is in her 60s, and she drinks 2 pots of coffee a day and can't understand why she doesn't seem to be able to relax. And I just sat there and looked for a few minutes, and I thought, okay, so 2 pots of coffee, are you drinking decaf? No, I hate decaf. I said, okay, what else do you drink besides coffee? Guess what her answer was. Take a guess, Shel.
Soda.
Diet Pepsi.
Oh, my God, even worse than soda.
And I said, okay, what do you have for breakfast? So I don't eat breakfast. I said, okay, just coffee, right? She said, yeah, just coffee. And as we're talking, you know, and I'm sitting there, and I must have been smiling. She says, this isn't funny, Renee. And I said, I'm sorry, but, you know, how old are you? And she goes, what does that have to do with anything? And I said, my good God, don't you read or do anything like that? And she starts laughing at me. And I said, honey, you've got to give up some of that caffeine. And she's very, very thin. She's very active, you know, but she really can't relax. She really can't, like, sit down every now and then and just, like, watch a movie or something. She has to, you know. And I said, well, why? You know, you're strung out is what you are. And she looked at me and she says, I don't do drugs. And I said, yes, you do.
Yeah, you do. It's so funny. You know, and I have the same reaction that you did because, you know, there's so much in the media and on TV, and although what the TV coverage is nonsense, they always give like half stories. But the bottom line is there's so much information out there about the effects of caffeine and how harsh soda is on the body and stuff. And then you have people that are surviving on this and then sitting there scratching their heads as to why they don't feel good all the time. You know, the mm-hmm. other thing about coffee and caffeine is that it cuts down on the body's ability to, I think it is processed iron. I have to double check this, but I think it's iron. So if you drink a lot of coffee, that's one of the reasons why you may feel fatigued, because you're going to get that artificial caffeine kick. But then when you drop, you really drop. And, you know, when that wears off and now you don't have the proper iron balance in your blood, now you're exhausted, you know. So people who drink coffee, they have to continually drink coffee throughout the day or they're ready to just, like, curl up in the corner and take a nap, you know. But it is surprising that people don't. And I have to say something. I was there, you know, 20 years ago. Before I embarked on this research I did, I was drinking a liter of Diet Pepsi was my thing, you know, so I'm right up there with everybody. I was drinking the aspartame, and I was drinking the cola and the soda and the caffeine, and I was drinking coffee every day. And I kind of went there. And mm-hmm. I mean, I was much younger, but the bottom line is I did not associate any of my symptoms to my diet. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that my body acquired so many illnesses, I mean, at one time I had chronic fatigue, I had fibromyalgia, I had Lyme disease, I had polycystic ovarian disease, I, you know, I just, you know, I could go on. I had a list of 12 of them. I had 12 active diseases all simultaneously. And some of them were pretty invasive debilitating. But every doctor I saw, and I saw 20 different specialists, every doctor I saw said it had nothing to do with my lifestyle. I told them what I ate and drank, and they said, oh, no, you're doing fine. And it wasn't until I went to a chiropractor, because chiropractors kind of go to more natural. It was actually my chiropractor that told me to quit drinking the soda. I mean, that's how I started. The first thing I did wasn't become vegetarian. It took me 2 more years to connect with becoming a vegetarian. I kind of battled against that, you know. And now I can't live any other way. But when it first came into my awareness, I was like, well, no, that's ridiculous. You don't need to be a vegetarian. I kind of kept putting it off. But the first thing I did was to stop drinking soda. And I noticed a marked difference just by taking that out of my diet. Huge difference. You know, and then that kind of springboard my whole health journey. And shortly after that, I started researching all the other things. But soda is extremely caustic to the body, and it causes all kinds of hyperactivity. It can cause hyperactivity, or it can cause the flip side of severe fatigue. It can cause mental fogginess. It all kinds of nasty things. It can cause digestive issues. Soda is just it's something that people should really either minimize or just not drink at all. I haven't had a soda now in over 15 years.
Yeah, I don't. But I'm hooked on green tea, which has aspartame in it, and I try to cut back on that, and it's an issue for me because it's something that I really enjoy. I do try to, like, when I feel like having green tea, I do try to make myself ice water or no ice water with lemon in it. I enjoy that. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy having that. I know it's much better for me, but we all have our vices. And I think if you can't give up something cold turkey, at least don't abuse it like everything else. You know, it's like the people that I know that like to have a glass of wine at night. My gynecologist, when I was carrying David, who was my last child, told me I should have a glass of wine every night, red wine. And he said, not three, Renee, just one. He said, but it will help relax you. It keeps your blood pressure going. And it's good for you as long as you don't abuse it. And this is so true of so many things that become vices to us because we overdo it. We have very gluttonous personalities, we Americans, very gluttonous personalities. If we like something, we think we should have all of it, not just a little bit of it. And I always laugh at the French friends that we met through the years who are hooked on lots of things that I would absolutely love to be hooked on, you know, the chocolate and the nice sweet wines and the breads and the croissants and all these kind of things. They love them, but they're not gluttonous. They don't, you know, they don't stop. I mean, a few of them did. I mean, I met some people that couldn't control it. But as a rule, because it's, you know, they take it with, you know, they treat it with respect. And
well, you know, one of the things to comment on that is when you're talking about, like, Europeans, and again, I found this out. Like, I've always heard people say this to me, but now I've experienced it myself. I've heard people say that when you go to Europe, food tastes different. And they're absolutely right, because I'm a big bread eater, and that's my vice. I just love all kinds of bread, you know. And I try to stick with eating the Ezekiel bread more often than not because it's a healthier choice. But I do have other types of bread. I love croissants and stuff like that. Well, when I went over to Europe, when we were in France and Germany, I had a croissant there. Oh, my God. It didn't taste anything like any croissant I've ever had in the United States. It was lighter. It was I can't even describe it. It was phenomenal. Now I understand what people were talking about. I felt better. As I ate in Europe, I had things that where I've also had counterparts here in the United States they not only tasted different, but I felt better afterwards. Now, I didn't eat any meat, and I stayed vegetarian, but I did have some things with cheeses in it and stuff like that. Felt completely different because the food there is cleaner. We really just have awful production methods in the United States in order to mass produce things and stuff like that, and we've kind of we've devalued the quality of food, which is a shame. That's another reason why you have so many people in the United States, more so in the United States than in other areas of the world, that suffer from obesity and malnutrition at the same time. And that's one of the reasons why there is an issue with overweightness in the United States, because people eat, they're not getting enough nutrition from what they eat because the food quality is poor. So they're hungry again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eating more calories that the body can use or needs to build the energy up, but they're not metabolized, gaining weight because of it, because they're just continually hungry. And I noticed a huge difference with that, you know. So when you say that people like breads and the chocolates and they don't seem to have such an issue with it, it's because the food itself is different and the body is able to metabolize it more thoroughly. And I experienced that firsthand.
Well, and I think that that's true for sure. I also think that, though, like I said, if we like something, Americans in general want it all. I mean, it's like, and you can get out of the food arena, get into electronics. I know people that have iPhone, iPad, iTablet, I this, I that, and I'm like, what in the hell do you need all those things for? They all do the same thing. Well, and I look at them and say, I'm serious. Why do you need to have all of those little gadgets? Because they get hooked on the world of gadgets. And or how about very, very wealthy people who have 10 cars? Why would you? I can understand having two cars. I can understand having a car that you tour with and a work truck or a work van or something that is conducive to, throwing the laundry in the back of or taking the garbage to the dump or wherever you live and whatever suits your lifestyle. I get all that. But there's people here in Florida to live over on, Millionaire's Row and stuff like that, that have got 10 cars, and some of them sit in a big room that you can see when you're on a boat out on the intercoastal. We tend to be very gluttonous, and it's an American thing for some reason. I don't know how we got off on this. I'm sure it was my driving that we brought us here, but I think that I guess what led me to this is the fact that if you are struggling with health issues, and God forbid you've been diagnosed with HIV, you have to come to terms with it and make some decisions that are going to be better for you. Because like we said in the beginning, you know, you're really the only one. We also have a tendency to put our hand out and want you to put something in it that's going to fix everything. Have you noticed that about us?
Yes, yes. It's like the pill mentality. You know, give me the magic pill, the magic bullet, make this all go away so I don't have to take responsibility and do anything to make that happen.
Yes, yes. I mean, if I had a dollar for every guest that ever came to me at the Institute and said, isn't there an easier way? I really don't like this food. And I said, yeah, sure, there's easier ways. You don't have to be okay. But if you've made a choice to be better and get yourself to a better place, and some of these people were perfectly healthy, by the way. They just realized that they didn't feel, they didn't have the exuberance or the love of life that they had for a long time. So they figured it had something to do with their nourishment. And indeed, they were probably right. But then they get there and find out how hard it is, and they want something easier. Well, you know, like if I just did this once a day, I said, well, that'd be better than what you're doing right now. But you know, is it going to make changes in leaps and bounds? Probably not. But again, you know, it is about choice. It is about deciding what's best for you. And as we've talked about on this show a million times, we are all so, so different. What works for me won't work for you, and vice versa. So, but HIV, according to the statistics that I've read, and I'm not going to read all of them this morning, but the consensus is that you can live a relatively comfortable life, the duration of your life, whatever that's meant to be, with HIV, as long as you take certain precautions, as long as you don't abuse your body that's already under some duress. So I thought that was great news, because I was under the impression that once you were diagnosed with HIV, it was like, you know, a downhill slide. But
well,
apparently
the medical establishment used to take that view. If you got diagnosed with HIV, we're going back 20 years ago, that was a death sentence.
Yeah, I know. That's where my knowledge came from. I remember reading it and hearing it and everything way back when. But it really isn't true any longer. I mean, they quote statistics of people being diagnosed with HIV in their teens and living to be, you know, older than me. So it's kind of but it's a choice again, you know. It's like everything else. Most of you that listen on a regular basis know that I have a sister that has had cancer now. She's on her third time. And she's 19 months younger than I am, and she did not live a very nourishing life. She was a smoker, a drinker, to excess. She's a little tiny. You wouldn't know she was related to me unless you got a good look at her face, and then you might see a family resemblance. And now she's really struggling, and this is, like I said, the third time. And now, of course, they want to do all kinds of, you know, major stuff to her again. It will not be the first time. And she said to me on the phone this week, I've done everything that they told me to do. And it just keeps coming back, Reen. And I think to myself, you know, those words echo in my head, because I don't want to say it's too late, because there's always buy-in time. There's always, when you love somebody, you want them with you as long as you can have them with you no matter what, right? I mean, you know, that's our thought on the subject. But if you're in your 20s now and you know you're doing stuff that isn't good for you and you're doing it to extreme, think now. Don't think 30 years from now, when your options are much smaller, a lot less attractive, and it's not nice. The other thing that I think a lot of young people don't get is that if you get one of these life-threatening challenges, it's not, okay, it's over. That's not true either. Sometimes it drags on for years and years and years, and it's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, you know, I have a sore throat every day. It's maybe I have to eat in a peg tube every day, or I don't have my voice box anymore, or I any number of things. Or both my legs swell up because my liver and my kidneys have quit functioning, so I can't walk anymore. It's not nice, everybody. I don't want to scare everybody, but if you're in your 20s and you know that you're headed down that path, wake up.
That's right.
Understand, you've got to make better choices, and the only one that can make them is you.
That's right.
Every older person has said this to every one of us at one time or another, I'm sure, and we don't listen because we always think that we can do it. When in truth, you can only do so much to the human body before it starts breaking down. It's an amazing machine. It does a lot of wonderful things for us. And some of us, I look at some of these kids that I watch on TV when the Olympics are on, and even last night we were at a football game for my Austin, who plays quarterback, and I watch all these kids out there slamming into each other and falling down and all these other kind of, and still bounding up and down this field, and I'm thinking to myself, good God, where'd they get all that energy? And they're just full of it. And then I look over, and here's kids that have been in school all day long. All the cheerleading teams are on the outskirts of the team. It's getting dark out. It's 7:30. I know that they all go to school at 6:30 in the morning. And here it is, 7:30 at night, and they're out there doing cheers and jumping up and down and holding each other up in the air and doing flips and everything. And I thought, God, don't throw that away. You know, first of all, revel in the fact that you have that kind of boundless energy. And don't abuse it. Support it. Do the things that keep you in a wonderful place so that you can keep on doing that. Because when it's gone, it's hard to get it back. It's really, really hard to get it back. Once you abuse it to the point that it's no longer there, doing an instant replay isn't a part of the program. So,
and I think it's really, really important to understand. One of the reasons why I was very pleased, because I went through about 8 of my books last night, I was very pleased to find the particular excerpt I did, because it demonstrates how how combining and using natural methods along with a medical approach can just yield remarkable results. I mean, you know, he's not recommending to not do any of the medical options, although in one case, this woman, Sharon Lund, actually refused the AVT. So her particular story was her success story is completely based on a natural approach, which included Chinese herbs, supplements, exercise, stress reduction. So we're dealing with the whole body. And that's the whole point of holistic medicine, is that it deals with the whole body. It doesn't look at a symptom and try to manage the symptom. It looks at healing the whole person, because we're not a piece of machinery. You can't look at where the symptom is, because a lot of times where the symptom is showing up isn't where the disorder or the disease is. It's somewhere else in the body, and you're just having a symptom in another place. And that's one of the difficulties with Western medicine, is that it's too much into symptom relief and management and not into curing what causes the symptom, okay? So that's why I was excited about that story that I read at the beginning, because it showed how even if the medical approach was still used, you were able to minimize the dosage. The lower the dosage, the lower the side effects. The lower the side effects, obviously, that's beneficial, because now the body can spend more time on just healing, what's going wrong in the body, boosting the immune system, and not have to deal with the side effects, which in the beginning, like I said, a lot of the medicines used in treating AIDS, the people were succumbing to the medication, like with chemotherapy, they were succumbing to the medication, not the disease. So the fact that people can utilize a naturalistic approach and look at lifestyle changes is very, very exciting. So we were talking about the acupuncture. Chinese herbs are extremely powerful. Supplementation is extremely powerful. Cleaning up your diet, you know, taking out some of the things that you know are toxic. All of this boosts the immune system, and even if you have a diagnosis, even if you have full-blown AIDS, remember that in the one study, 30 of this woman's patients had full-blown AIDS, and on her naturalistic protocol, she had a 98% survival rate. I mean, think about that. That was 20 years ago, and there's been a lot more holistic research done since then. So that's why I was excited about finding that. And it just shows how powerful lifestyle choices, even if you still go the medical route, you want to marry it with lifestyle changes. You want to marry it with a naturalistic approach. So you need to find doctors, because there are medical doctors out there like this. You want to find a medical doctor who appreciates marrying the two, putting the two together, saying, yes, these are your medical pharmaceutical options, but yet these lifestyle choices will make this work better, you know. And there are medical doctors out there, and if anybody has a really grave diagnosis like cancer or AIDS, they want to search out for a doctor that will work with them in that way.
Well, and again, we talked about this very recently, the chemotherapy and the radiation are killers. That's why they use them. They kill cancer. But a killer is a killer is a killer. And the truth of the matter is, if you don't put some strength and some protection in your body when you are playing with killers, then other parts of you are going to get hurt. It's very simple to understand that, I think. And I think that what you and I have said this for years, in the perfect world, because we learn to appreciate so many things in the holistic arena and the nourishment arena and natural touch, massage, body work. We had a wonderful therapist at the Institute who is a very funny, pretty small little guy whose energy was amazing. And people would come to me and say, I don't know what he did to me, but I have never felt it in my whole life. So we get all that. But sometimes, you know, you realize that it's not enough by itself, just like the medical arena is not enough by itself. So in the perfect world, and I see it coming, I see it merging as we speak, medical, and instead of calling it holistic, I'm going to call it like a smart lifestyle with medical, using what you learn, paying attention to what you do. You know when you're doing something that isn't good for you, unless you're only 6 months old. You know. It isn't good.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know. Yep. You really do. I mean, even when you're two and you're doing something that, you know, is going to make mommy mad, you even get that when you're two. That's why you hide around the corner to do it.
That's right.
So, Mikey and Diana, Mike is my second child, Diana was my third child. I had taken his bottle away from him. He would sneak into the crib and take Diana's bottle and hide behind the chair and drink it. I'd go to her, I'd go to her crib and I'd be like, where's your baba? And there he'd be, hiding behind the chair, drinking her bottle. So even at two, we know the things that we're really not supposed to be doing. And we often make the decision to do them anyway. As you spend your day today, I'd like you all to think about the little changes you can make in your own lives to make them better, to make yourself happier, to make you more fun to be around. I want to give a special hello to Donna, who is a real follower of the Renee's Heart to Heart show. And we've never laid eyes on each other, but we've corresponded now for a very long time. I love you. I think your energy is amazing. She's a nurse. She's funny. She keeps me laughing on Facebook all the time. So I want to say a special thank you. She loves Shelley and I and says so on a regular basis. So everybody, give it the best shot you can give it today and have a wonderful, wonderful. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Reed.
God bless everybody.
Have a great day, everyone.
Bye, Shell. Talk to you later.